Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Janna Balabha Giri Bharadhari Jaya Gopi Janna Balabha Giri Bharadhari Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Balabha Giri Bharadhari Janna Balabha Giri Bharadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimadhi Zivying Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimadhi Zivying Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Adanta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Dai Gaura Premanandi O glories to the assembled devotees O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to Shishiguru and Shigouranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creations, Chapter 5, The Demigods Appeal to the Lord for Protection, text number 24. Sri Suka Uvacha Ityabhasya Asuram Bheda Sahadevair Arindhama Ajitasya Padam Shakshaj Jagama Tamasha Param Ityabhasya Asuram Bheda Sahadevair Arindhama Ajitasya Padam Shakshaj Jagama Tamasa Param Ityabhasya Suram Bheda Sahadevair Arindhama Ajitasya Padam Shakshaj Jagama Tamasha Param. Please chant. Sri Suka Uvacha Suka Uvacha Ityabhasya Asuram Bheda Sahadevair Arindhama Ajitasya Padam Shakshaj Jagama Tamasa Param. Sri Suka Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Iti, thus, Abhasya, talking, Suram, unto the demigods, Bedha, Lord Brahma, who is the head of this universe, and who give everyone good sense in Vedic knowledge. Saha, with Devai, the demigods, Arindama, O Maharaj Parikshit, subduer of all kinds of enemies, such as the senses, Ajitasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Padam, to the place, Shakshat, directly, Jagama, went, Tamasaha, the world of darkness, Param, transcendental to, beyond. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Maharaj Parikshit, subduer of all enemies, after Lord Brahma finished speaking to the demigods, he took them with him to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond this material world. The Lord's abode is on an island called Swetadvip, which is situated in the ocean of milk. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit is addressed here as Arindama, subduer of all enemies. Not only do we have enemies outside of our bodies, but within our bodies there are many enemies, such as lusty desires, anger, and greed. Maharaj Parikshit is specifically addressed as Arindama because in his political life he was able to subdue all kinds of enemies. And even though he was a young king, as soon as he heard that he was going to die within 7 days, he immediately left his kingdom. He did not follow the dictates of enemies within his body, such as lust, greed, and anger. He was not at all angry with the Muni's son who has cursed him. Rather, he accepted the curse and prepared for his death in the association of Sukadev Goswami. Death is inevitable. No one can surpass the force of death. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit, while fully alive, wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He is consequently addressed here as Arindama. Another word, Surapriya, is also significant. Although Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is equal toward everyone, he is especially inclined towards his devotees. Jivajanti tumam bhaktya majite te shuchapyaham. The devotees are all demigods. There are two kinds of men within this world. One is called the Deva, and the other is called the Asura. The Padma Purana states, Dvabhuta sargolo kosmin daivya sura evacha Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asurastat viparyajat. Anyone who is a devotee of the Lord is called a Deva, and others, even though they may be devotees of demigods, are called Asuras. Ravana, for example, was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but he is described as an Asura. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu is described as a great devotee of Lord Brahma, yet he was also an Asura. Therefore, only the devotee of Lord Vishnu is called Sura, not Asura. Lord Krishna is very much pleased with his devotees, even if they are not on the topmost stage of devotional service. Even on the lower stages of devotional service, one is transcendental. And if one continues with devotional life, he continues to be a Deva or Sura. If one continues in this way, Krishna will always be pleased with him and will always give him all instructions so that he may be very easily returned home back to Godhead. Concerning Ajitasya Padam, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the ocean of milk of this material world, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Padam Shirodadi Sta Sweta Dvipan Tamasa Prakite Param. The island known as Swetadvip, which is in the ocean of milk, is transcendental. You have nothing to do with this material world. A city government may be a rest house where, a city government may have a rest house where the governor and important government officers stay. Such a rest house is not an ordinary house. Similarly, although Swetadvip, which is in the ocean of milk, in this material world is parampadam, transcendental. Sri Suka Uvacha Itya Bhashya Suram Bheda Saha Devar Arindama Ajitasya Padam Shakshach Jagama Tamasha Param. O Maharaj Parikshit, subduer of all enemies, after Lord Brahma finished speaking to the demigods, he took them with him to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond this material world. The Lord's abode is on an island called Swetadvip, which is situated in the ocean of milk. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirubhishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatyade Satarine Vancha Kalpa Taruvyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyayvacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna everyone. From Bhakti Prabhu, Hare Krishna. My obeisances, welcome. You should be sitting here, but I take your permission. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada brings a very wonderful and important point in his purport in terms of conquering the enemies, specifically the enemies within are is a very relevant and important aspect of our practicing Krishna consciousness. And he's highlighting Shukadev Goswami addressing Maharaj Parikshit as the conqueror of all enemies. And specifically, Maharaj Parikshit is highlighting this point Shukadev Goswami is highlighting the point that Maharaj Parikshit was able to conquer the enemies within. Although he applies also to his enemies outside, he was a very powerful king. He was an emperor of the whole world. But specifically, he was highlighting how he was able to control lust and anger and greed. And we know that Maharaj Parikshit, although being the protector of the whole world and faultless, was a saintly king, and he was cursed in a very immature way by the son of Shanika Rishi to die in 7 days, and he took it with as understanding that this was the arrangement of the Lord, and there was not a single agitation. He was not angry. He was not lamenting. He just took it as part of the arrangement of the Lord and embraced it, and that brought him to the association with Sukadev Goswami and to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the for being able to overcome to overcome these internal enemies is basically the great task that all aspiring devotees have. And Krishna brings this pretty much to the attention of Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a discussion of this. Actually, it came from Arjuna himself. Arjuna asked a question to Krishna. He wanted to know, because Krishna is explaining about how to act in this world, you know, Nishkam Karma Yoga, how to basically being able to take and embrace Krishna's system for the whole, you know, creation. In the beginning of chapter 3, Krishna says that he explains to Arjuna the system that he has created. It's a perfect system. He had the cooperative arrangement of demigods and men and the process of sacrifice. So he says that in the beginning of this creation, he sent forth generations of demigods and men and blessed them by those saying, here's the process of sacrifice, yagya. And by this process of yagya, you can be very prosperous and happy in this world, in this life, and at the end, you go back home, back to Godhead. So it's a perfect, complete system. You know, we were talking about this recently, you know, that with this from the Ishupanishad, the Ishavashya principle, that there is for each one of us, there's an allotted a facility, and we have to accept it, embrace it, and be happy with it, and not trying to get more than we're supposed to get. And you live very happy like that, taking care of all the needs, physical, mental, psychophysical needs that we have, and being able to dedicate our life fully for the process of understanding the absolute truth. Jivashya tattva jigyasha, that this life is meant to understand the absolute truth. So that is the system. And, you know, Krishna presents that in the third chapter to Arjuna. He says, you know, that you have to work. But here's how you do work. You do work, all the results of work should be an offering to Lord Vishnu. And then when you do that, you'll be free from all reactions. And if you don't do that, you know, the opposite, the contrary, is that we'll be fully entangled. Karma bandhana means that we'll be fully entangled in the actions and reactions of this world. And so the process of sacrifice for the pleasure of Vishnu is there. And Arjuna, after Krishna explains this, Arjuna asked Krishna, he said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Because although this perfect system is there, then the tendency is that you don't want to follow the system. You don't want to follow the system. So you know, the majority of the conditioned souls, they try to go away from that system. Either, you know, consciously or unconsciously, they just don't connect to the system that Krishna has given. And what is that that forces the living entity to go away from that, to act against that perfect system? That perfect system is a system of Param Dharma. And you want to act in ways that are against the laws, you know, that Krishna has given us, the arrangement that Krishna has given us. So what is that that forces the living entity to act against those principles in a sinful way? And then Krishna says, it's lust only. famous verse, and very, very relevant. It's lost only Arjuna, which is born of contact with a material mortal passion, and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So loss is the biggest enemy, and loss comes with the contact of the mortal passion. So, and then what happened is that from loss, then loss with no doubt transformed into anger, wrath, and that anger brings you into the mode of ignorance, takes you down and down into the mode of ignorance. So that's the process, that's the fall down of the living entity. That's what happens to all living entities that turn away from Krishna's process. So that is the biggest enemy. That is the greatest enemy. And Krishna also explains to Arjuna what are the sitting place that this great enemy has conquered, strategic places. You know, when you have when there is war, the generals always wants to recognize strategic places to be able to conquer. So you don't have to conquer the whole space or country. You go to a particular strategic place and then you're able to conquer everything. So you don't have to fight all fronts. You go to those strategic points. And laws have captured the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. And specifically, the senses, with the senses, then one wants to be in touch, associated with all these sense objects. And the mind is fully controlled by the senses. So the mind becomes controlled by the senses, who are carried on by the desire to enjoy. And the intelligence becomes completely bewildered, completely covered by loss. It's almost the intelligence or the intellect is the one who is able to ascertain, oh, wait a minute, this is not good, you know, avoid. But when the intelligence becomes bewildered, then the intelligence say, no, actually, there's a good point for this thing. It's not a bad idea. Everybody's doing it. And, you know, actually, I have doubts that this other thing looks like it's not part of culture, you know, it's outside, you know, the normal behavior, you know, being a devotee or putting, you know, that type of thing, that's crazy. You look crazy. We may hear something like that. So this makes sense. So intelligence becomes quite bewildered. So to the point that loss is able to fully control the ways of the conditioned soul. And then it's a down spiral. Because what happened with lost, then one is, it becomes, Krishna explains that it's like a huge fire that doesn't, it's gigantic. And if you're dealing with a gigantic fire, by putting more fuel, it becomes bigger. So it's insatiable. Because the way we're dealing with that fire is that you add the fuel. The fire is asking more, and then you put, and then now it becomes bigger, and you think it will be satisfied. No, now it's bigger, so now it needs more. And you put more, and now it's bigger, and it needs more, and so on, like that. So that's the quality of loss. It doesn't become satiated. It wants more and more and more. So it goes on and on and on. And so it basically becomes an impossible or an unconquerable enemy for the conditioned soul. There's no way. And for the devotee, we're dealing also with this huge enemy. So specifically, Krishna is addressing the devotees here by making us aware. So he's talking to Krishna, to Arjuna, and he's giving Arjuna that he's giving it the you know, how you say that, the intelligence department, the CIA, you know, like that, that is able to find, you know, where the enemy have his things, you know, and what is the qualities of the enemy, you know. He gave all the intelligence work, and then so we get to know where is it, where is located, what is the strategy of this great enemy, and how can we conquer it. So however, as devotees, we also, we're dealing with this enemy. We have to fully conquer this enemy. We have to become like Maharaj Parikshit. That's the whole idea. And we know that as long as this enemy is there, it's a huge obstacle in our being fully situated in devotional service, peacefully situated in devotional service, as long as we have that enemy there. So so we have to conquer. So what is the strategy that Krishna give us to conquer the enemy of loss? Well, he says two things he recommends. He says, therefore, O Arjuna, best of Bharat, of the Bharatas, in the beginning, this is our situation. We're in the beginning of dealing with this great enemy. Just a moment ago, we were victimized by this big enemy. We're still harassed big time by this big enemy. So in the beginning, what do we do? What is the strategy? So in the beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, loss, by regulating the senses. So the beginning for us is sadhana. Sadhana curbs this big enemy. So it will still be acting, but basically you curbed it. You build a protection by the process of regulating your senses, by the process of sadhana bhakti. What is the process of sadhana bhakti? You remember that loss becomes, you know, empowered by the contact with the mortal passion. That's how loss, you know, arises. So when we cultivate the mortal goodness, passion decreases. So therefore, the process of sadhana bhakti brings us to the mortal goodness. And then we curb the mortal passion, our contact with the mortal passion, and we be able to curb it. Now, once you have the thing curbed, you know, you put a wall around yourself by the practice of sadhana bhakti, then what is the next thing that is there? Slate is destroyed with knowledge and self-realization, transcendental knowledge. So it's explained that what is that transcendental knowledge? What is that Maharaj Parikshit did, you know, that he embraced and he was fully protected? Well, he availed himself to listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Sukadev Goswami. So transcendental knowledge is explained you receive through, you know, Krishna's world, and basically the great representation of transcendental knowledge in this world is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So with the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're able to destroy lust. And that's what Srila Sutta Goswami explains in that, the second chapter of the first canto, that Nashta Praesha Padrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sivayam, all these things start to be destroyed. And as we destroy them, and as they're getting destroyed out of our heart, then the moral goodness arises, the moral passion decreases. And even, you know, at one point, we're able to situate ourselves in the position of pure goodness. And then, you know, we can be addressed as the conqueror of the enemies, this great enemy. So, but it is important to understand that this task cannot be achieved by the living entity. It is an impossible task for a conditioned soul to be able to conquer. You know, even if you apply this process, even if you control your senses, even if you cultivate knowledge, on its own, you won't be able to conquer lust. And there are many examples of that. It's explained that lust is such an unconquerable power that there's a parallel in the past tense of the lore that sort of depict the conquering of lust. And that's the past tense of Lord Ramachandra killing Ravana. And it's very beautiful how the Acharyas goes into the depth of this pastime to illustrate how, you know, the deeper, also very deep philosophical meanings of everything. And Ravana was the personification of lust. Like possibly in the pastimes of the Lord, this is the highest example of lust, Ravana. And so what is lust is when you want to take everything should be for your enjoyment. And then Lord Ramachandra, the personality of Godhead, and there is Sita Devi, and Sita Devi is considered the goddess of fortune. So everything that is not only wealth, but everything that is fortune in this world is bestowed by Srimati Sita Devi. And we know that Sita, the goddess of fortune, everything is meant, fortune is meant for the pleasure of Lord Ramachandra. So for the devotees, the whole mood is to see that, assist Sita Devi in making Lord Ramachandra happy. So the whole thing is to make sure that Sita is always by the side of Lord Ramachandra. And so Hanuman, Sugriva, all the inhabitants of Ayodhya, Lakshman, everybody is just to make sure that connection is there, that Ram and Sita are always together. But Ravana, lost personified, he wanted Sita for himself. So he stole Sita from Lord Ramachandra, and eventually Lord Ramachandra killed him. He had the arrow. So, but Ravana, actually, he was completely unconquerable. He was so powerful that all the devatas, all the world actually couldn't do anything about him. And not only him, he was alone with very powerful demons, Kumbhakarna, Indrajit, his son, who was like anger personified, and a whole array of powerful demons. So no one was able to conquer Ravana. No demigod was able to even consider facing Ravana. Only Lord Ramachandra had the arrow to kill Ravana. And Ravana has a special boon too that also depict the how potent and insurmountable is lust. Ravana have the thing that you can cut, he has 10 heads, and then you can cut one head or even the 10 heads, and then poof, they pop again. So you cut a head, another head comes out. You cut the other head, another head comes out, like that. So losses like that, you know, as transcendentalists, you know, aspiring transcendentalists, we think, you know, I think I got this one down. You know, you practicing controlling your senses, you doing the moral goodness stuff, you studying, you trying, and all of a sudden, something happened, you know, like another thing. You know, you think you cut this one down, and poop, lust pops his head again, another one comes out, and another one comes out, you cut this one, another one comes out, and another one comes out. And lust is very tricky. It's a very subtle thing. Sometimes, you know, it tricks you in some ways. You think you have it down, and it just sends you the right little thing to actually agitate, and poof, the whole thing comes out. We know the story of Sarvara Muni, who was meditating, powerful yogi, who was meditating on the water for thousands and thousands of years. And he just needed a couple of fish copulating in front of him to actually completely destroy his whole austerity. He just, by seeing them, the two fishes together, he say, oh, no, I have to get it too. So he went and married something like so many thousands of princes. So there was a story too, I heard, this is, you know, in Mahatma Gandhi's sort of like, you know, stories. Mahatma Gandhi, apparently he was very strict and in the power and the importance of practicing celibacy. And he inculcated that very strongly into his followers. So among his followers was one secretary who also followed that very strictly in celibacy. He was married for 20 something years, but he was practicing within his marriage celibacy. He hasn't been with his wife throughout all those 20 years, and they sleep in separate rooms. So, but he was a very powerful politician too, you know, a very strong associate of Mahatma Gandhi. And so the political enemies, they decided, oh, we have to get this guy down, you know, and then he was, in order to weaken Gandhi's position. So they decided they're going to infiltrate a prostitute in the staff of this guy, to entice him and to bring him down. So, you know, they send this prostitute with, you know, all the ripe dress paraphernalia, you know, like, you know, the little movements just like that, and, you know, the tingling and the poses and this, to entice the mind of this person. However, she was unsuccessful. The man didn't fall down with her, but he immediately, for the first time, went and united with his wife. So, not that that's bad, but, you know, but the point is that his austerity was knocked down. You know, the moral is that it's very subtle. To expose oneself to, you know, even you know, a simple thing, a little movie or some little you know, documentary or so, you may see, you know, some beautiful people dancing and this and that, you know, a beautiful girl or a beautiful man, you know, like that, then no, it's not doing anything, it's not, you know, but those images then agitate something and poop, the whole thing pops out again. And then one starts to contemplate, you know, those desires. So it is very tough. It is an impossible task to be able to conquer that. The point is that even great, powerful people hasn't been able to do it. So how do you do it? How do you do it? Well, Krishna is there. So in the verse, Krishna is called as Ajitasya. Surapriya. Surapriya. The devotees are very dear to him. So Krishna is the one, like Lord Ram was the one who had the arrow to kill Ravana. No one else had it. So Lord Ram, Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is the one who can conquer loss. So when we take shelter of him and we fully surrender to him, then aham tuam sarva papevyo, he takes care of it. Masuchaha, we don't have to worry about dealing with this great enemy. Krishna will do. So Krishna will come forward to protect us and being able to conquer. So we have, it's not only our practices in itself, it's just become, you know, take up the process of surrender to Krishna. So this is really the business of the devotee, you know, the process of saranagati, that we're doing everything, that as we practice our sadhana bhakti, is because it's within the instructions of Krishna, within the process of saranagati, which is, you know, two of the six process of surrender, is that one accepts the favorable things for surrendering and one rejects the unfavorable things. So so we're doing that as a process of surrendering to Krishna. Surrendering to Krishna will be the 100% solution to this great enemy of lust. And again, how do we get that? We have to shield ourselves by following sadhana bhakti and by embracing and taking, you know, the hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam and the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And then we can transform loss into love or prema, which is, you know, the goal of life. So I stop here. Any comments or questions? Back to Marcel Prabhu.
You mentioned how only Ram had the arrow. Is that pastime kind of in the Bhagavatam?
It's in the Bhagavatam, in the ninth canto. And also there's a whole book that is called the Ramayam that narrates the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, which is amazing, beautiful.
Thank you. I was curious about it.
Prema Bhakti Prabhu.
Well, you were explaining very nicely all the features of lust and how it keeps attacking us, just like Ravana would pop up new heads very nicely. I was having difficulty with lust a while, years ago, and I prayed to Krishna within the heart, Paramatma, and he said, how can I conquer lust? And he gave me a very simple solution that's working for me. And he said, just, you're not this body. As soon as you think, I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, then right away the lust disappears, because lust is for the satisfaction of the body. Right, sensual enjoyment. But if we think, and I'm not the body, and Krishna, in that verse that you were alluding to, how do we conquer lust? You know, Arjuna says it's so difficult. It's like trying to conquer the wind, capture the wind. And Krishna says, well, yes, it is very difficult, but by practice. And detachment. So by thinking, I'm not the body, we're invoking this detachment from the body. Right? I'm a spirit soul. So we're looking at it from... So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
We're feeling lusty, we should think, I'm not this body. I'm a spirit soul. I'm a servant of Krishna and Krishna's devotees.
So yeah, thank you so much. That's my Guru Maharaj also says something similar. He says, when we are sort of afflicted by all these tribulations, you know, that is caused by our, you know, desires and loss and, you know, all the things, that we have to go back or like touch again our base, and that is, you know, what you say. That I'm an eternal spirit soul servant of Krishna. He say, we again touch base with reality. You know, the reality is that I'm a spirit soul who is an eternal servant of Krishna. So every time we have to step back and say, remind ourselves who we are. And then you start again from there. And yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Back to Jordan Prabhu.
I was reading yesterday that envy is the root of lust, or the root of all anartas, actually. And actually, envy of Krishna is ultimately the root of all anartas. And that's the reason why we're in the material world.
Right.
Directly because we are envious of Krishna. We want to be Krishna.
Right. What is that verse? Icha dvesha samutena. That is, those two are, you know, that comes from envy of Krishna, desire and hate. I desire Krishna's position and I hate Krishna. It's embarrassing. Imagine. And somehow or other, we still have some of that stuff inside, which is, you know, it's embarrassing, it's painful just to think about it. I mean, especially when, you know, we see Kishore Kishori and we feel grateful about, and then not a little long ago. I'm still probably, I mean, as long as I'm trying to find enjoyment outside the lotus feet of Krishna, there is some envy there. And that's terrible to think about it. But it's a reality. So therefore, like Prema Bhakti Prabhu said, we have to remind ourselves our position. That's not reality. That's some crazy maniac stuff that doesn't connect to anything. Envy of Krishna. How sad. All right. Anything else? Thank you, Prabhu. Grantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai.